Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Hey, welcome back to another edition of the VF1 show. We are recording this post Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, so we'll have some thoughts on that, as well as all of the other action and all of the other rumors and elephants in the room that's kind of flying around the paddock this past week. As always, I am the co-host Vincenzo Landino. Joining me is Vanessa VF Castro over on the other side of the country, kind of ish, maybe like kind in the of. Middle of the country ish. What's going on? Let's dive right into our immediate thoughts on the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. What'd you think? What did you, how many laps did you sleep through? Maybe that's a new metric. How many laps did you sleep through?
I didn't sleep through any of them, but I was on my phone online shopping for a good maybe eighth of the race. I just felt like it was much more entertaining than what was actually happening. And again, it's nothing against Verstappen, nothing against Red Bull per se. It's just, we know what's going to happen. So let's just, you know, enjoy the shits and the gigs. What did you think of the race? How many laps did you sleep through?
I would say probably about 12. About 12 laps. Bad. I just kind of zonked out. I put the baby down for her nap and I was so exhausted because we were running around all morning. And I was like, oh my God, I'm finally sitting down and there's like just a little bit of quiet. And that was it. I made it through that. And one, it was like, you could tell the broadcast direction was, they were trying to find action. Well, not that they were trying. It wasn't like that hard to find. There was a lot of action happening across, you know, the entire grid, and the middle of the pack was, there was tons of action, and, you know, Magnussen had, I don't know, a half hour worth of penalties or whatever. And that kind of made it really fun for them in the back. And, but just a little, I mean, it was a very well needed, like, I don't know, 20 minute nap or so, but I snapped out of it just in time to see Behrman, finish and cross the line seventh. I was very excited about that. I'll definitely catch the full replay, a little bit later, but I think I got the gist of it.
Oh, yeah. You got the gist of it. I mean, I think some of the more entertaining things were perhaps the pit stop situation happening after the yellow flag. That was exciting. I think that was more entertaining than the race in its entirety. So I'll take that. And then there was the there was the Piastri-Hamilton little fight. Little dance that they were doing. I quite enjoyed that. Then there was the situation, the incident where Lance Stroll hit the wall. And this is probably the most iconic quote from this entire season, which we're only two races in. So there's lots of room for improvement. But when Lance radioed in, "I hit the wall." And then they said, "Can you bring it back?" He said, "No, I'm in the fucking wall."
Yeah. And I said, "Can you guys bring it?" And I think his other comment was like, "Can you bring it back?" I don't want to say always, but I think we kind of forget sometimes that, you know, the engineers and whatnot they're sitting in there, like, they're just looking at telemetry, right? They're just looking at, and I think even Crofty, pretty much. And Crofty was like, are they not watching the broadcast? Or it was like something along those lines. And I'm thinking to myself, wouldn't that just make sense for them to have like a screen of the broadcast up? Mm-hmm. So that was kind of funny. I mean, not funny for Lance to crash, but it was funny to hear that call.
Yeah. And I'm like, are y'all not seeing what we're seeing?
Clearly
there. Clearly it's very not. Obvious. He cannot bring the car back. So
yeah.
That was entertaining. But Ollie Bierman, I mean, and first things first, I will say that that Carlos Sainz Sr. watching the race with his dad in the garage, that was a cool moment, because I think a lot of times he's not worried about, obviously, Ollie taking his son's seat. I mean, let's be real. Sainz is looking for a seat right now because of Lewis.
Yeah.
But it was still, I think, a show that Carlos is a genuine racer. He's always going to be a racer. And so being there, not with his son who just had surgery, but I mean, and I know that Carlos Jr. was there, but just seeing him in that moment with Ollie's dad, kind of giving him that encouragement and, you know, being there as a hype man, that's a cool moment. And I think we see a lot of moments between the F1 dads, but that was a cool one. So
yeah, it was nice to see Carlos there and in good spirits and whatnot. I think after a surgery like that, and I think Alex Albon, didn't he have a similar surgery, and he had like all sorts of complications from it, or he had some sort of also minor, quote unquote, minor surgery. But yeah, it was nice to see him there. It was nice to see that the team seemed really, really in good spirits, which was also very, very awesome to see. John Elkann also made a comment about it. Like, Carlos was here and Behrman's dad was there. You know, we were watching the race. Like, the spirits were really high. Everyone went out and like was rooting for Ollie. And you know, Charles obviously finished, you know, the best he could. In my opinion, Charles finished pretty much P1. You know, it's like there's Red Bull tier and then there's everybody else, and like he finished as high as you can at this point, right? That is, third place is the highest you can get, because the Red Bulls are so far ahead. And I'm not saying that I'm accepting of P3, but there's nothing else we can do. But to hear that everyone was in good spirits, and to hear that like there was a lot of camaraderie in that paddock, that's exciting. Like, that it's good to hear that, and hopefully it translates to when Carlos is actually on, you know, driving, and that can happen. Cause I'm kind of annoyed with this whole, like, you know, him and Charles, you know, not getting along, and then they obviously fight each other on track. It's kind of annoying. Like, it's getting pretty annoying. I'd love to see them, you know, finish P2 this year, and I would love for that to be the case. I would love for one of them to pass Perez, but they've got to be united. You know, they have to come at this as a united front, and hasn't seemed to be the case as much as it did today. Yeah. So definitely excited about that.
I don't even know that that happens this year, because Sainz is trying to get the best contract he can get. He's trying to kind of lead the pack. So I see Sainz having his own interpretation of things, which obviously we know what happens when drivers are not on the same page. Carnage usually ensues. So, I mean, I would love to say, oh yeah, maybe this is a year that Ferrari calms down a bit because of the situation at hand. But again, if Carlos was already in a seat, maybe if he already had a contract, maybe when he does have a contract, it will be a different year for him. But even then, he's going to want to try and max out his points. So I don't really know what's going to happen with Ferrari. I hope that they get it together, but it also makes me wonder what's going to happen with Charles and Lewis when he comes in next year, what that's going to look like. Because obviously Charles wants to win. He's a fantastic race car driver. He makes some mistakes for sure, but I'm curious what happens next year, because we know Lewis still has that fire. He wants to win. And crazy enough, I don't see Ferrari letting them race the way maybe they're currently allowing Charles and Carlos to go at it. I think they have an opportunity. If they can say, hey, we're the team that got Lewis his eighth, I think that's more important to them. And it's strange to say that, but you know, they want that. They want a title.
They want, you know, and this is one thing that I will say, and I don't know how much newer F1 fans or fans of other teams that might not have the type of history that, you know, Ferrari brings, and it's not about the individual driver. I mean, yes, it is, but like it's very much team first, right? It's very much now Schumacher was just a whole different story, but the culture, and unless things are changing that I don't even know about, like there is very much the idea of team first. So it is, we want to get back to a constructors. That is a win. Like that is that's what's important to the team. That's why bringing Lewis in would be very important for them. Yes, they definitely want to get Lewis the eighth title. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
But I think we'd all be fooling ourselves if we thought for one second that it was not because they thought he could come in, help the development of the car, and actually provide a real shot at another, F1 title for, constructors title.
Yeah. And that matters to Ferrari.
It matters.
The constructors matters, I think, in a lot of ways more than the drivers, because for them, that says that what we're doing in our factory matters. And I think that this is going to be the season where they could, I think out of all the teams on the grid, from what we're seeing right now, Ferrari has that potential to at least come in second. And so while they're sorting the driver situation out, if they can go into Lewis's first year, second in the constructors, that's going to be a huge, huge vote of confidence for both drivers going into next season.
Yeah.
They're going to say, we have a car. We know we have a car. And Mercedes is in the rear view right now. We're not concerned about them. We're concerned about getting the pace that Red Bull has. And maybe this is kind of where we can maybe talk about the rumor right now of Adrian Newey is being courted right now at Ferrari, according to the rumor mill.
I think everybody should be courting the man. I mean, let's be real here.
For sure. But I mean, again, I think when you've done everything that he's done with a certain team, I think you're kind of looking for your next thing right now. And maybe this is why it looks like Red Bull has been going through maybe the recycling bins of some of these other teams and finding out concepts that didn't work for them and figuring out how to make them work. Maybe they're a little bit bored. Maybe they want to do something different. And they've obviously done that a little bit with the no pod side pod concept this year. So that's the rumor right now that Ferrari is trying to get Adrian Newey. And I think if they're successful in that, could you imagine what kind of rocket ship they could be looking at next season? And I don't think it would take Adrian Newey very long to come in there and look at that Ferrari and say, this is everything that needs to be changed on this car. And you know, he likes to lurk too. He lurks with his clipboard. He knows what these teams are doing.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? If that happened,
there would be zero excuse for them not to be a winner within, 2 years. Like, give them a year to work on a full year to work on a car and then like be a contender the following year. Like there was zero excuse, right? Like but again, like you said, it is rumor. It is just, it almost feels like to me, it would be dumb for anybody not to be trying to, and this feels a little dirty, but like, it would feel weird. It would be weird if every team that had a little bit of cachet wasn't trying to cash in on anything that's happening over at Red Bull and say like, oh, hey, Adrian, you looking for a new spot? You want to get away from that? That what's going on there? It would be dumb. But if Ferrari actually did pull that off, it looks like, Vasseur is definitely making every effort to pull. I mean, he's pulling a lot of aerodynamicists over and from Red Bull and that have worked with that team. I mean, listen, he knows what he's doing. He's definitely being smart about how he's building it. It would not surprise me. Let's put it that way. But I'm not getting my hopes up.
Well,
it's the hope that kills you. And all of my sports teams seem to do that to me. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Well, if there was any team principal that could have gotten Lewis Hamilton to make that jump from Mercedes to Ferrari, it was Fred Vasseur. So who knows? Maybe he's got some persuasion that from some persuasion skills that maybe we could all learn a thing or two from. But yeah, I don't know. I think that would be the biggest shakeup. And I think right now, especially Formula One needs a shakeup. There's so, and I think this is why it's so easy right now for so many people to kind of obsess over what they don't think Formula One is doing in multiple different areas. We'll leave that as vague as possible. because there's nothing else for people to focus on. Because a lot of people, they're not particularly a concern. I wouldn't say concern. Concern's not the right word, but they don't care as much about the technical aspects of the sport. They care about the pageantry. They care about the pop culture moments. And I think a lot of it too is because of the viral moments that people have access to also go viral on social media.
Yeah.
And that I think keeps a lot of fans in the game, because without that, without the entertainment value, they're not getting that on track right now. So they have to get it somewhere. So I think right now Formula One, it's at that place where, and we've talked about this, and Formula One, to their credit, they have done this where they're offering a little bit more of the technical expansion, where they're having conversations. We noticed it on the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix broadcast, where Bernie Collins was being asked strategic questions. If you were in this position, what would you be doing? And she would, you know, she was fantastic at that today. And then you have them in studio giving, you know, recording TikToks of what certain things are. But they're not, I wouldn't say they're doing the best job at promoting these things, but they are trying to give people a more technical angle into the sport, which we've been talking about for years now. And it seems like they're kind of heading in that direction, which is fantastic. But they need to push that harder and harder, because I think that is how you get people to stay in the sport without having people rely on the drama, which is kind of what I think people are doing right now. And it's always drama. There's always, it doesn't matter what year it is, there's always some dramatic thing that happens that kind of pits, you know, fan bases against fan bases. And maybe this is just another part of the Verstappen, Red Bull draw, where everybody looks at them as the villain. So it doesn't matter what you say, they're going to be villainized, and people are going to have their sides. And it's like, are we here for the drama? Are we here for the spectacle? Are we here for the racing? And while the racing isn't as competitive these days, at the very least, they could give us more to kind of help us understand the telemetry, understand the strategy, understand what all goes into the race itself. So they're at that point right now. I think they're getting more keen to the ideas that we've had, that others have brought up, about keeping people engaged and entertained in a non-dramatic, non-problematic way. But I think we'll see what happens moving forward, because I don't, again, like I said, with the drama we shall not name, it doesn't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what Formula One does to kind of break from that. What are your whole thoughts on F1's direction right now? Do you think they're doing enough to engage fans beyond the drama?
I don't know, because, you know, when you watch you know, shows like Drive to Survive and whatnot, they lend directly to that type of dramatic interest in the sport. You know, watching the latest season of Drive to Survive, and it wasn't like, I don't know, it didn't really feel, I mean, you barely saw Red Bull in it, which is fine, because obviously, you know, like, people sick of Red Bull, quote unquote, sick of Red Bull, right? There's a group of people that's sick of Red Bull. There's other people that understand what the domination entails and how the sport works. So Yeah, I think the answer is no. They're not doing enough to really break that hold that the dramatic content or the drama brings. I don't, you know, we've kind of tried to ask this question numerous times, like, how do they do it and what do they do? I don't know that there's answers, or I don't know if they are the answers or if they are, there's probably more than one, right? There's options. We can do a whole bunch of different things versus just like, oh, the one fix, right? Which is kind of where we're at with like Drive to Survive, right? Drive to Survive was seen by some people. Oh, wow. This is going to be like the thing. This is the fix. And that's really not, right? Like, it's not the fix. It doesn't do anything for a lot of people, except for a certain subset. So I don't know, you know, again, the biggest, the other issue is you've still got a competition problem, right? There's still a massive competition problem.
That's the biggest thing, in my opinion.
Haas is sixth in the constructors with a single point. Now, yes, we're only two races in, but they have one single point. There's a big disconnect between the top five and the bottom five. You've got Haas with a point, and then everyone else has nothing. Williams, Sauber, RB, and Alpine. They all have nothing. And there's no indication that any of those teams will be scoring points, right? Like, I know we're only two races in, but the indication is like, there's nothing that tells me that any of those drivers are, maybe Tsunoda might be fighting for 10, maybe. But other than that, there's really none of those drivers are looking to fight into the points. So we have a runaway first. We have nothing at the bottom five. So really, like last year, you've got this 2-3-4-5 situation going. And really, it's like there's two spots, right? There's two or three that maybe we're fighting for. Aston still needs a second driver in order to really fight, because you just got to – I mean, Alonso's the only one getting, you know, doing anything over there. So that to me is the biggest challenge, and will continue to be the biggest challenge until they figure out how to make the racing enjoyable again, you know? Max got out front today. We talked about the DRS issue, right? Like, is DRS opening up earlier better? And I was like, well, it could be better, but Max breaks out a second ahead after the first lap.
Yeah.
Well, now the second place can't turn it on anyway, but second place can get attacked because now there's DRS against them, right? So like, again, if there's a way to fix, or not even fix, but if there's a way to create better on-track racing, and I've, you know, the suggestions that you and I have made on this show numerous times, like, you know, more agile cars, smaller cars, lighter cars, you know, doing your best not to completely reverse all the safety advancements that have happened over the last 30 years, but how can you make the cars more? You want to keep moving to street races. Well, we've got these big boats. You know, that doesn't make things enjoyable. Now, Jeddah's a little bit different. Seems like a little bit of a bigger, you know, I know we're calling it a street race, but I mean, that looks like, to me, it's a circuit. I mean, it's a whatever, nearly 4 mile circuit. Like, it's a track for all intents and purposes, in my opinion, right? But you've got these other street circuits that are, and we're continuing to get more, they're just too narrow. And so who does it benefit? It benefits whoever qualifies at the front, and then everyone else is just kind of like meandering at the middle, and you're hoping that the strategy calls change the outcome or create position, you know, jostling for position. The challenge with that, and this is a big issue that I've had with non-motorsport friends that got into F1, is that they genuinely just don't understand motorsport, right?
Yeah.
Like motorsport is very different than other sports. Like there's part of the strategy that is just like, okay, we're in that middle stint, you know, in between tire strategies, or just like we're in that middle stint of the race where we're kind of nursing our tires a little bit. We're not blasting away on the track. We're just managing position. People don't understand that. Well, why? How come they're not passing? How come there's not this? How come there's not that? It's like, well, right now they're trying to manage fuel load and they're managing tire strategy, and you know, the tire, you don't want the tires to just drop off the performance. And so there's inherently, and I think we've probably beat this one quite a bit, but there's always going to be an education gap on new fans come in, or fans that come in and they're like, they just don't understand motorsport in general, right? It looks cool. Cars are fast, hot driver, whatever it is, but there isn't any like, oh, all motorsport is kind of like this. You know, the bad rap that NASCAR gets is like, oh yeah, they just turn left for, you know, whatever, 4 hours. Well, that might be the case, you know, and yes, there is definitely an aspect of it where they are just going around in a circle. But I mean, Formula One, they're essentially going around in a circle too, right? Most racing is going around in some sort of circle. It might not be a perfectly round, but it's around and around, right? And so that to me is probably the biggest hurdle for really getting people to care. And then lastly, my final point, there's always going to be attrition. So the gains that we saw from, you know, Drive to Survive and all the marketing blitz efforts that they've made, you're always going to have a drop off. You know, people get excited. Wow, this is awesome. This is so cool. This new sport, this new thing. I love cars now. I love this driver, yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, 2 years of watching the same thing without a ton of excitement across the board. And you're like, eh, you know what? I'm not crossing off my Sunday mornings anymore. I'll record it. Or, you know what? I'll watch the highlights. And then you get drop off, which again is to be expected. There's always going to be attrition on with anything like that. It's about how do you manage it and what's the next step? And so it looks like, you know, F1 wants to go the route of, well, let's keep adding these street circuits, and let's keep adding more stuff in the US, and let's keep adding, you know, more spectacle that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with racing, like all of that. And that is where you're going to, it's like a business that is always chasing new customers rather than the telephone companies, the mobile phone providers, at least in the United States. For those that are not living in the United States, a lot of mobile phone providers here, they appeal to new customers. They give massive discounts and free phones and all this stuff to the new customers. But to the existing customers, like you're actually not eligible for any of those discounts. So it's kind of like the same thing with you know, and I'm going to say F1 because that's what we're talking about. But there's other sports that are going down the same route, and unfortunately, a lot of them are motorsport. But same thing. How do we appeal to the new people? Let's bring in the new people. But then you're constantly just trying to bring in new people, and so you have to go bigger and bolder and more crazy every time, instead of saying, "Wait a minute, we've got this core group of people that are really interested in or love this sport, that would do anything for this sport," and appealing to them is more important. But right now, again, there's a balance. So anyway, I don't know what the answer is, but yeah. I just kind of said whatever all the problems are, what I believe to be the where I believe to they should be looking, you know, to make the changes, and where they should be looking to understand who they're actually trying to attract. Versus, you know what? Let's just keep making the biggest spectacle possible, and whoever joins. I don't think that they're being that flippant with it, but certain things would never surprise me.
Yeah, I think attrition is a big issue with Formula One, because you do have fans that joined the sport during COVID because of DTS, but also because they loved Lewis Hamilton. They loved what LH was doing. They loved what Mercedes was doing. And they also saw that, okay, yeah, we have the best team. If you don't like it, then find another sport, right? Now you have the Verstappen fans who are like, well, if you don't like it, find another sport. And so it's this constant volley. And every couple of years, as regulations change, as teams get things right, you have this ego volley among fans. Mm-hmm. And I think that once the Max Verstappen era, the Red Bull era of fans, maybe it's going to be in 2026 when it happens, where, say, Red Bull, they lose all their top people. Maybe they lose Adrian Newey. Maybe, who knows? Maybe Verstappen does end up going to Mercedes and Red Bull drops off. Then, just like what we're seeing right now with how many Lewis Hamilton fans are actually Mercedes fans versus how many of them are Lewis Hamilton fans. And right now you're seeing a lot of Lewis Hamilton fans say, well, I guess I wasn't actually a Mercedes fan to begin with. I guess I was just a Lewis fan. Okay, well, go Ferrari. I think you're going to start to see the same thing occur. If Verstappen does go to another team, you're going to see the same thing happen, where did the Red Bull loyalty exist, or was it just a loyalty to Verstappen himself? And I think that is what gives drivers so much more leverage. And you're seeing, I think what you're seeing right now with Lewis is maybe teams seeing that, okay, these fans are not loyal to us. These fans are loyal to the drivers. So we have to keep the drivers happy. And with that, I think you're seeing a driver market like we've never seen before. And that, I think, creates an incredible amount of responsibility and loyalty these teams have to keeping their drivers happy. And maybe that is that sort of monopoly on these drivers could potentially also be an undoing for four, not an undoing, but, you know, make for some rocky moments for Formula One, because you're going to get used to the same old, same old. I don't see Charles Leclerc driving for any other team than Ferrari. I don't. Maybe down the line he does, but could you imagine the conflicts people would have if he left Ferrari? I think that's kind of one of those maybe different scenarios than, say, Lewis leaving Mercedes, or even, say, if George left Mercedes. But yeah, I think that we're starting to see an era where fans are loyal to the drivers, not the teams themselves. And we're going to start to see that kind of, I think, especially in this driver market this year, we're going to start to see that highlighted more and more. And so teams are going to have to do what they can, and the sport is going to have to do what it can, because to retain these fans, because once a team starts to lose its fan base, it starts to lose its engagement, and it starts to look like a JV team. Imagine if Mercedes had, maybe they get Lance Stroll. Okay.
Even Hülkenberg and Magnussen. I mean,
yeah. Okay. So say they get Hülkenberg and Magnussen. I don't see Mercedes having the fan interest like they have with Lewis and George, two British men driving for a top F1. I don't see them having the same engagement. So right now, this is about drivers saying, what can we do to make the sport more entertaining? What can we do to engage our fans with the sport? And maybe that is perhaps where Formula One needs to look for. How do we retain these fans? Maybe they do need to go to the drivers and have a quorum with them and say, what needs to be done? I don't see them losing fans right now, but I do see a situation this season, especially, where viewership starts to dip. And we know those viewership numbers, they matter significantly to kind of gauge the growth of the sport. So I think that if Formula One is concerned about that, which they should be, then the drivers are who they need to be advising on that, because they know they're in control of that.
Yeah, I'm sure they will be looking at, you know, things like numbers. I mean, I know last week's numbers were down for the opening Grand Prix in the United States. Again, it was a Saturday versus a Sunday, so that could make a difference. But they were down in other countries too. And, you know, some of my colleagues over in in Italy, you know, sent me the numbers, and those were low. Those had dropped significant, you know. I think it's that, it, you know, obviously the Verstappen dominance is going to create apathy amongst any fan that's not a Red Bull fan, right? And that's kind of to be expected. But one thing I don't know how much I don't know how much I fully agree is, I do agree with you on the fact that yes, there are more driver focused fans that have come over from you know, Drive to Survive, and the whole new fan base is definitely more driver centric because, you know, they're like, oh, they're seeing them on Instagram and they're seeing them on social media and like, and all that stuff. So yes, but I do think that Red Bull to an extent feels like it's more, feels like the fan base is might be more interested in the team to some degree, more so than Mercedes. Like Mercedes to me feels very Lewis Hamilton centric, and it's like if they're not Lewis fans, they're not Mercedes, or they're Lewis fans, they're not Mercedes fans. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. That's total speculation. I'm not saying like I don't know anything. There's just making an assumption based on the feeling I get based on people that I talk to and you know, the conversations you see, especially online and whatnot. But yeah, it is, I think you are on something with the whole fan based approach or the whole driver based approach, right? Like maybe F1 really needs to approach these guys and be like, okay, we need to do more to get people caring about the drivers across the board. But I'll say this.
Yeah.
I did see people talking. I saw a couple posts, IndyCar, and there was some IndyCar fans having a discussion, and it was a picture of Lando Norris walking the grid, walking through the paddock with like whatever brand of, it must have been his own brand of merch or something. You know, he's looking fly as all hell with his, you know, his hair is kind of gelled or whatever the heck he's got. And he's got his sunglasses on. And he's, I mean, it's basically like a sweatsuit, but it looks cool, right? It's fashion with a U.
Yeah.
And they were like, this is why IndyCar is losing fans because, you know, IndyCar doesn't allow drivers to do this. They have to wear their full race suits all the time. They don't get to really show off their personality. And I'm like, wow, this is so interesting because Formula One was in the same exact boat in, you know, 2016 and prior. Well, I don't want to say prior because there was a lot of personality on the grid in the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, where you had some real, studs on the grid. I mean, James Hunt and Niki Lauda and Ayrton Senna. I mean, there was plenty of fashion and personality with them. But then something got a little bit, I guess, might have gotten toned down, or the fact that social media became such a big way to communicate with you know, fans, and the expectations got higher. But F1, you know, drivers weren't allowed to do anything. And when that changed, that's when things got more, like you said, fan-centric or driver-centric. And again, same boat, like IndyCar, NASCAR, like they all are asking the same questions. Like, well, how do we get to be like, you know, like this? How, you know, how come our drivers can't become personalities? And so I just thought it was an interesting anecdote for what we're talking about because – you know, it is, I think we should be cognizant that F1, while not perfect, is definitely leading the way in a lot of things that I wouldn't have said they would lead in, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with branding and personality and, you know, marketing. And so it is still the sport or the series that a lot of people are looking to when it comes to how do we grow, expand, people do want that. People do want that connection with these personalities, with these athletes, with these drivers. People want to, you know how they can connect better with them. So I, as bad as we, as much as we want to rag on it, I think there's also a lot of credit where, you know, where it's due for a lot of the good things that have been happening, you know, with the sport.
Yeah. Well, I credit Formula One a lot because I think that they've read the room in a lot of regards. I mean, I think people will beg to differ right now and say that there should be more transparency with certain things. I don't disagree with that. But when it comes to the actual sport itself, when it comes to things that fans actually do want, I think they know how to read that. And they know how to read that well. And they know how to give the fans things that maybe other sports won't give them. And maybe that's what makes them think that they have greater access to Formula One. Maybe they think that there's a lot of fan events throughout race weekends where drivers or where fans can go and they can meet drivers, they can meet F1 personalities, media people. And the idea of F1 is to not make the driver so inaccessible and the media people so inaccessible that they'll shut entire hotels down where you cannot access these people whatsoever. They give you plenty of opportunities to access these people, even if it's just for a picture, for an autograph. You still get to say, I met this person. And, or I had a lovely conversation with this person in the lobby at the hotel today. How fun. And you know that they don't stay in cheap hotels. It's all very luxe, very premium. But at the same right, these hotels don't, especially in Austin, they don't close the hotel down to the public. Like you cannot enter if you're not staying here. Everything's open. So you still have access. And they still try and bring you as much as it can in that 3-4 day window of the race itself. Plus they have also all the different brands have their own activations throughout race week, where if there's a sponsor for a team, they will have you, or they will have the drivers at, you know, a location. Like I know Microsoft had Renault, I want to say back in 2017, 18, one of those years, down at the Domain, which is a, like a big outdoor mall, in Austin, Texas. And they had the drivers out there and fans got to meet them. And it was just, you know, this big activation, and they have those all every race weekend, no matter where you go. So they do make it accessible. And I will say that is very different than say the NFL or the NHL, where a lot of the events that they have, they are sponsored events by your partners, by your sponsors. And they're only accessible to the athletes, maybe their families, the investors, the presidents, the people who have a big stake within these teams. They're the ones who have the access, right? So Formula One does a really good job of letting fans feel like they are part of this, which is why I think Formula One fans also feel like they have the right, when something does happen, to chime in and say to F1, give us more. We need more. Be more transparent. Because they feel like they have that access that is kind of unprecedented in other sports. Whereas in other sports, you don't necessarily have access, but there is activism that happens on social media. If something happens, say a player does something really bad, then and they do nothing about it, and then everybody starts going you know, voicing their opinions on social media, and then it kind of becomes a, we're pressured by the public to act on this. And that has happened a lot in other sports. So I do think that F1 responds a lot better. I think they evolve the sport to what the fans want, which is good, because we remember the Ecclestone era of Formula One, where the access wasn't there. The excitement really wasn't there. Yeah, the racing might have been better. It might have been more fun, but in that regard, but it, you didn't feel as connected to the sport. You didn't feel as connected to the drivers. And now you do. So there is that trade-off there. And I don't know, do we want to go back to the old school petrol era where we had, you know, the V8s, and we didn't have rules and there was no spending cap and it was more closed off. And we were kind of reduced to actual circuits or actual tracks, and street circuits were kind of maybe hit or miss. Do we want to go back to that without access, or do we want to maintain a little more access and have all of the restrictions that we have now?
I just think it's the question is, you know, I don't necessarily have the answer.
Yeah.
But I know what I want and, or what I would want. And I think it's, you know, access at what cost? And it's like, if I'm getting access, but the racing is worse, what am I accessing?
Yeah.
What access, like, what is my access worth?
Yeah. Getting to meet a driver and getting an autograph is the access. Getting to buy a sweatshirt that the driver has created, that's the access. Is that worth the trade-off?
But the thought process there is that if the product isn't good, why do I care about the driver at that point? Right. Like,
I
care about them because they're great. I wasn't a Tom Brady fan while he was playing. He was beating my Steelers. But you know, the reason I cared about it, whatever, let's say I was a Brady fan. Like, the reason I care about the Patriots and Tom Brady and all that stuff was because the product was good on the field. Right. So naturally, Tom Brady, the last pick in the NFL draft in, 2001 or 2000, no one gave a shit about him. No one cared about him. Right. He was just this dude that went to Michigan he got drafted absolutely dead last. Cool. Why do I care about him? I don't. Oh, wait, now the product is good. Like, now I care. So yeah. Access is great, but would I have cared to be next to Tom Brady or in the same room as Tom Brady if he wasn't great? No. None of us would have known about him, and we would have, and no one would have been any worse off for it. Yeah. Right. So I think there is definitely, an aspect where you have to understand that there is a reason for there to be great racing. The reason why people care about your sport and care about your, care about your product is because it's great, not because it's there. Because I can go watch 1,000 other motorsport series. I can go watch 1,000 other types of sports, right? There's a reason why I want to tune into this one. And I'll tell you this, going further, we as society, whatever, we're getting, there's so many more choices at our disposal that we didn't necessarily have even 15 years ago, right? 20 years ago. Now there's look at all the choices we have, not even just sports, just content to consume. There's more books being written, because everybody has access to writing a book and publishing a book, right? There's more content being created with videos. There's YouTube, there's TikTok, there's Instagram. Oh, by the way, there's the latest and greatest television and movies and reality series and all of that. There is so much content now that by not being the best, you just become another thing that someone's adding to their watch list.
Yeah.
Passively. And you become another thing that people are like, whatever. Like, I'll check it out. If I don't, I don't. Like, there's people that there's friends that I talk to, and I'll be like, oh, you got to watch this TV show, you got to watch this movie that I watched, or whatever. And, we'll have that conversation. And we're always going, oh yeah, I've been meaning to add that one to my list, but I've just got so many other things I want to watch, and I haven't even watched those yet, right? Like, I've got a list of things I want to catch. I just don't even have time for it. Or there's a list of books I want to read. I don't have time for it. There's a list of places I want to go to. I just haven't had time for it. So you're also fighting, Formula One gets to the point where you're also fighting and competing against Netflix, and you're competing against YouTube, and you're competing against Hulu, whatever, insert, television or content streamer here. Now you're competing against those things for eyeballs. And the more of those battles that you have to fight, the more you get away from what you're actually good at. And then the more you're getting away from why you should have been creating the content for the people that matter in the first place. I could probably go at that all day. There's plenty of studies. If we were to go down this whole like content marketing rabbit hole and brand building rabbit hole, which is my forte, but there's a lot of studies.
That might not be a bad episode idea, actually. Let's go down the brand building of Formula One.
Why not? Yeah, there's a whole, and I'll leave this as a teaser then, but there is an entire concept of 1,000 true fans, or even further, 100 true fans. Now, I'm not suggesting that F1 only has 100 or 1,000 fans, but the concept is that you don't need to try to appeal to the masses constantly. Yeah. You just need to appeal to your loyal, rabid fans, because then others will discover it, kind of, you know, create kind of that organic discovery / interest in whatever it is that you've got going on. And so, yeah, we could definitely go down, you know, that type of conversation at some point, but that would, for those that are interested in doing a little bit of research, 1,000 true fans or 100 true fans, there's two different articles that were written. One is by Kevin Kelly, 1,000 true fans. And then the other one is by, I forget her name, but she was over at Andreessen Horowitz, the venture capitalist firm, Lee Jin, I believe her name was. And she wrote something. She said, she went even further and said 100 true fans, which was, I thought, a very interesting addition or deeper look into that whole 1,000 true fan concept. So it's a fascinating read if anyone wants to read it. But I think we definitely should talk about it. You're right.
Yeah, for sure. I think it'd be a great idea. So you guys have any ideas on like, or marketing questions about maybe motorsports or anything in that vein, definitely reach out to us, because I think that would be an interesting conversation for sure. Maybe we could find some guests.
Oh, for sure.
On that as well.
For sure.
This is the marketing aspect and the business aspect are completely other beasts of Formula One that I think people don't even have a slight clue of what all goes into that. So yeah, let's put that on the docket. But I asked a question to our followers.
So you got some responses.
What did y'all think about the race? We'll read your responses on our podcast, which we're recording right now. So get them in, and they got them in. So there's four of them. Let's start with one from A Moose for You. His thoughts, a little lengthy list here. Verstappen won the championship. Checo secured his seat at Red Bull. Leclerc beat Leclerc. Ollie Bearman won the race. Piastri quietly driving better than Lando. Lando flapping his arms in the corners as he breaks DRS from Lewis Hamilton. Hamilton dreaming about being on Bearman's seat. George Russell wondering if all those sleepovers were worth it.
Oh my God.
Alonso thinking about his next contract. Latifi into the wall. Sorry, I meant Stroll. Gasly probably doing some stretches. Nico dreaming of being Alonso. Albon. Here comes Magnussen, the greatest driving roadblock to take out everyone behind him that he can, desperately trying to rack up as many penalties as he can. Who said F1 has no strategy? The rest of us waiting for 2020. So I think this about sums it up, if I'm being honest.
It's a great look at the race, I guess.
It's brilliant, actually. George Russell wondering if all those sleepovers were worth it. That kills me. All right, then we've got Super's Ego at SFSE Ego. Ultimately, it doesn't matter how exciting the midfield is. People tune in for the win, and Max will win every time with absolutely zero competition. Tough to have an engaging race with that, even though I love the track. It's a good track for sure. And yeah, that sucked. Mike B. Mack said, as predictable as you'd expect, made barely washable because someone had to have their appendix removed and was replaced by a teenager. Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely it was absolutely the focus of the broadcast, right? It was Ollie Bearman.
Yeah.
Which was cool. So. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. As a Ferrari fan, it was exciting to hear them focusing on our squad. But yeah, it definitely was. If you're watching that broadcast and you are, you know, wondering if this is going to be exciting, like if it wasn't for the fact that he was in that race, it was pretty boring. I mean, they barely showed Verstappen.
Yeah.
Which, they didn't have to. Rightfully so. He's so far out ahead at, you know, what is there to show him driving around the track? I mean, like, just show him to me if he's watching Netflix on his steering wheel or something. Like,
he's playing hangman with his mechanics on the steering wheel.
I mean, that would be hysterical, but yeah, that's
honestly, if you take Behrman out of the equation today, what race? I don't think people would have. I mean, there's a reason he got driver of the day today. I mean, coming from what, P11 to P7?
I mean, listen, you had a little bit of the Norris Hamilton battle, which, you know, British centric broadcast is going to be like losing their mind. Like, oh, this is great. Oh, like, yeah, I'm Brit. And, you know, at one point you've got Russell Norris or Russell Behrman, Norris Hamilton, you know, actually, I think that's how they finished too, right? 6, 7, 8, 9.
I think,
So, you know, yeah, that's pretty cool. But for the rest of us that are like, all right, well, this doesn't really do anything. Like, cool. They're fighting for 7th place, 8th place. Yeah, I don't know how much of that race was super exciting.
Yeah.
Like you brought out the safety car thing, which was interesting. And I thought, I know Checo got penalized, which never, doesn't actually feel like a penalty when you, did he serve it in a pit? Like, I didn't even
know. It wasn't, it wouldn't have had a time penalty on, that's how much distance there was between him and Charles, that it wouldn't have mattered.
Okay, so he just got the +5 after the fact. Yeah. And it didn't matter. Okay, yeah. Okay. Because I was slightly confused. I was like, wait a minute. He didn't serve it in a pit because he didn't stop again, obviously.
Yeah.
It so, just, okay, that makes sense.
There was that much of a gap that it didn't really matter. It was kind of
Yeah. And then there was the Lando jump start that didn't get penalized for, which was odd. And then Magnussen got what, like 20 seconds and 2 10-second penalties, which even the broadcast was like, wait a minute, what are we giving him 10-second penalties for? These don't even seem like they should be like 5-second, or like they should be like a black and white flag, like worst case. So
yeah.
But again, other than that, what are you talking about? Like, what are you really taking away from this race? I mean, Behrman has to be the biggest thing you're taking away from this race, right? Yeah. The fact that the 18-year-old gets into this seat with an hour to spare or whatever, not even, like, it was an hour, right? Something like that, 45, like.
Yeah, it was very quick,
He was asked, like, the morning of, and that's it. I mean, that's your excitement, in my opinion. I don't.
Yeah. Well, I think that my biggest, to kind of wrap the race up, I've got to just bring up the Pierre Gasly DNF, because listen, Alpine is starting to really kind of, I think, take Haas's place in unserious teams. Because listen, I mean, you have this whole group of celebrity investors coming in, and yet,
Anthony Joshua was at the race, who is one of the investors, by the way.
Yeah.
Boxer Anthony Joshua.
And you can't even assemble a team, and everyone keeps saying, oh, we're excited for 2026. You can't even assemble a team now. You can't. I mean, we're literally now 2 races into the season, and you're now having massive personnel turnover happening. It honestly kind of blows my mind that this is where they're at right now, because I think, where do you go from here if you're Alpine? Because this has got to be embarrassing. You've got all these investors coming in that are probably embarrassed right now. I know that Travis Kelce is one of the most visible investors in the world right now simply because he's dating Taylor Swift. I mean, in the United States, everyone knows who Travis Kelce is. Everyone knows who Patrick Mahomes are, who's also
an investor. Yeah, and I'd argue that it's Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds is the biggest draw on that team, on that investor list.
Well, I would say right now, just because of the Taylor Swift factor and the fact that he's seen wearing an Alpine hat, and in the international community, people know what Alpine is. So you've got that level of investors in there, and this is how you're treating that. And it's frustrating. I'm not even an Alpine fan. And I'm like, what are y'all doing? You're taking a massive opportunity and squandering it.
Yeah, and I don't think they can just, you can't just change your fortunes, right? Just because suddenly you have investors or like celebrity investors. Yeah. I will say this, though, that it's like their situations, what's going on there seems a lot different, right? Whereas you have other teams, they're like, okay, we're just biding our time for 2026. They're still competing. They're still somewhat like the teams aren't falling apart, like that kind of stuff. With Alpine, it's like
it's falling apart.
Yeah, they're losing important pieces to the team at a time when, yeah, you're going to be going into this transition to 26, but are you going to have anybody there to develop the car and to actually make a run at like doing anything? I'll say this is I think this might be Andretti's way in.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They already now they previously with other folks at Renault before all of this went down and before the investment, we know that they had some conversations around the power unit being supplied from Renault and being badged as a GM or Cadillac, whatever. But I wonder if this is the way in. Like, I wonder if this is ultimately how they get themselves into the sport. I don't know that they want to. I don't know that they want to kind of be like taking over a shit show versus like, hey, let's just start from scratch. But if this is their way in, maybe this is their way in. And that would be interesting. But the more you see, like you said, that you made this such a good point when you said, the unserious, they're taking over as unserious. When you see these unserious type teams like this just bopping around, and it actually makes me more angry about the Andretti rejection, because it's like, well, they weren't going to add value to the sport. And yet I'm to believe that teams like Haas and Alpine are adding that much value to the sport that you think that those are like I really, really gets me when I think about like the brand of Alpine, the brand of Haas in F1. I know that Haas has other series that they're in and whatnot, and they do a lot more than just race. Like, they're an actual tooling and automation company. Like, they actually have they have a business there, right? I really, really like get pissed about that. Like, how could you not allow this group with real racing pedigree in? So I don't want to go too far off that, but.
Yeah.
And F1 pedigree. Not just racing pedigree, but you're right.
I completely agree. Yeah. And it really, really upsets me every time I continue to go back to that logic of why they decided not to give Andretti entry. And it's like, hey, what the hell are we doing? And again, I think if it comes down to this is the pinnacle of motor racing, right? I don't see the pinnacle of motor racing. I see gatekeeping happening. I see teams that are so afraid of losing their positions in Formula One that you're at the bottom. You're going to continue being at the bottom. Yet you're not going to let a team in that's better than you because you don't want them taking your money that the other top teams are earning for you. It blows my mind. Like, you talk about a sport that is just kind of built on petty. And that is that. That's kind of what I'm getting right now from that, because you've got, if you're Andretti and you're watching this race and you're thinking to yourself, Haas and Alpine, what the fuck are you doing? Like, we don't bring awesome value
for sure,
but you do, Oh, okay. Tell me what value you bring. I've got a bone to pick with that. That upsets me. And again, I'm a GM loyalist. I'm a Cadillac loyalist. That is all I drive. And I just, it upsets me as being a huge F1 fan for a long time, 2 decades now, seeing their, like, reading their logic and trying to understand it. Like, you're picking that over this? What? Yeah, it blows my mind. It's going to continue to blow my mind. I hope things change, because, again, things have to change. I don't see this F1 or this Netflix era of Formula One fans sticking around into this new era of regulations if they have nothing to really root for, because I think they're already aware that new regulations typically come the new hegemon. They're aware of that. And so this period right now of musical cars happening with the driver turnovers due to contracts, that is going to play a massive role, I think, in people staying committed to the sport, but also where they see the future of the sport going. And if they continue to see half the grid sucking, half the grid not investing what it needs to, half the grid saying, okay, well, we might have a shit strategy, but hey, if we can hold up the entire backfield, then okay, that's our strategy. That's not good enough. That's just not good enough. So I don't know. I think to kind of circle around this entire conversation, that F1 is continue to be put in that position where, what do they do to get that once in a lifetime, I think, growth spurt of the COVID drive to survive era? How do they get them to stay with the sport through the new regulations? And especially if you've got a situation where other series are seeing this massive momentum shift in motorsports interest, what are they going to do? What's IndyCar going to do, for example, to kind of take those fans from Formula One, or at least at the very least, interest them in watching their sport as well?
I mean, listen, and we see it with other series and whatnot. Like, there's plenty of other series that the racing is
better,
arguably better. Yeah. Not arguably, it is better.
Yeah.
And they just don't have either the money, right, or the star power or the marketing that F1 has has right now. So when you say things like, man, they're given this opportunity, they've got this mass opportunity at their disposal that other series don't necessarily have the ability to do. The argument with IndyCar is arguably that their racing is about the drivers, because every car is essentially the same.
Similar, yeah.
So it's skill on skill, right? It's like, how skilled are you as a driver? They've got road races. They've got the ovals. Like, there's plenty of excitement. They've got, I will say, the Indy 500 is, probably the best singular race, right? Like, there's not much better than the Indy 500. Maybe Le Mans, but that's a 24-hour race. That's a hard race to get non-motorsport fans interested in, right? Monaco, the racing at Monaco is secondary to anything else. The Indy 500 truly is about the racing spectacle, right? Everything from qualifying and the actual, like, on track. So, and it's one of those things that diehards and newbies can appreciate. And yet they just can't build, they can't expand that brand the way F1 is, has been able to. And so you do wonder, like, why are you wasting your opportunity to do something really badass? But yeah, so I don't know. I'll just kind of leave it there. But that's kind of how I feel about what they're doing.
Yeah, same. This is going to be a long season. Still have the same predictions?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, we are looking at just absolute domination for Max. I mean, they looked completely untouchable, right?
Yeah.
Yet again. Yeah. And I mean, Checo looked pretty good today too, right? So now, so if you've got both of these guys that are in a position where they are unbeatable, I mean, you know, Checo finished what, 13 seconds, I think, ahead of Leclerc. And again, maybe this wasn't the track for Ferrari or whatever, but you're still only talking about three drivers. And let's say, okay, let's throw Carlos in there too. So you're really only talking about two teams, you know, four drivers. There's 20 drivers. There's 10 teams. Yeah. I don't see, unless something drastic happens with Red Bull or they just decide to be like, you know what? Let's just try to lose a race or something. Like, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, same.
Even when Max isn't perfect, he looks way better than everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I will say this. I think that this idea we had coming into the season that second Red Bull seat was really Daniel Ricciardo's to lose. I think he's losing it. And I think he's losing it to Checo. Because I think if you're
no shot.
Yeah. I mean, we've officially dubbed the V-carb sugar-free Red Bull. So
love it. Love that, by the way.
But it was still supposed to be a monster of a car this year. It was supposed to be a car that could still kind of, you know, we saw last year in testing when they decided to put Daniel Ricciardo back into that Red Bull last year was, or the AlphaTauri last year was that his lap time would have put him on the front row with Max. And I think there was a lot, there was so much excitement and momentum going into that. And now he can't even get into the points. So
I mean, it's two races in too. So like, I don't want to be all like, oh man, you know, he's done, he's cooked, but
yeah,
there's no indication that, you know, I don't know if there's any indication that what he's got going on is exactly, going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they could.
Shattering.
They could possibly do an experiment if they're that far up, especially if Checo is that far up the totem pole in terms of driver points. They could say, "Well, let's do an experiment. Let's see how. Let's switch drivers for a weekend. You know, Checo, you go to the sugar-free Red Bull. Daniel, we're promoting you, and let's see what you can do in that car." But you know, Checo wouldn't really have a choice. He'd have to say, "Okay, whatever." Maybe that would be their ability to test them. But I just, if you're not performing in the sugar-free Red Bull, you're not giving them much in terms of saying, I should be a serious contender for Checo's seat. And I think that if you're Red Bull, you're looking at your driver lineup today and you're saying to yourself, it would be stupid of us to sign any other driver because we know that Checo can handle that car. Is there any other driver that can handle that car? So
I don't see Checo. I don't see Checo there past the contract. Maybe
into 2025 because it's the last year of regulations.
Past 25, just because it's like, you know what, let's just get you through 26, whatever. But I don't actually see, I don't see him there long term. He's also old, you know. He's 34, I think.
That's not that old,
so well, it's not old because we're looking at drivers like Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso. But in modern, you know, F1, are we seeing how many of these guys are we seeing? Pat, you know, Daniel Ricciardo, we're already saying is like, oh, dude, you're old, and you know, you're 30, he's 34, so like,
I'm not
saying they're old. I'm 39. So yeah, believe me, saying that a 34-year-old is old is you know, pains me. But yeah, it's not the norm. And I think teams, when you see team, when you see guys like what Ollie Bearman did today, and when you see, you know, other F2 studs, like, at what point do you want to give them a shot at what, you know, what's going on?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think all my predictions that I made early season are, I'm just going to stick to all of it. Like, I just don't see it. I don't see Red Bull, you know, failing at anything. They're just too good. Such a well-oiled machine. The only thing that's going to stop them is their own internal, you know, the thing that we barely talked about on the show today. That's the stuff that's going to stop them.
That thing that I don't think we're going to give much airtime to until someone can actually give us something that is concrete evidence.
No, exactly. Yeah. I think that's what a lot of folks on the Red Bull team are probably doing the same thing. They're like, listen, I've heard from a lot of folks in the paddock that are just like, yeah, you talk to anybody on the team and they're just like, we're focused on our job. Like, we're doing our job.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't been told anything. And quite frankly, they don't deserve to know, right? It's a private matter. And so that's the way they're playing it. It's only the media and the Twitter warriors that are like, we need to know all this stuff. You know, that's the only ones that are demanding to know anything. And so,
yeah,
until we hear that there's anything actually happening to the point where, you know, someone should be removed, it's not a conversation that I think we need to have on the show. And I will say this, I even put this in my newsletter. Made this comment. While I don't know what's going on, I will say that where there's smoke, there's fire. And this is just a lot of smoke, right? So there's something. We just don't know what exactly that something is. There's definitely an issue. Somebody doesn't like Christian Horner, obviously. Somebody doesn't like Jos Verstappen, obviously. But, well, I don't know, like, they're winning races and things are operating as if nothing is happening. So for us to speculate is exactly that. It's speculation.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you guys want the chisme, the drama, this isn't the podcast for you. Maybe direct your sales over to TikTok. But yeah, if you are into the actual black and white conversation, the deep dives, all that, this is the podcast for you, the VF1 show with Vincenzo Landino and VF Castro. Have anything else to wrap up with today? I think we've said it all.
No, that was a good wrap. I'm excited for Australia. Australia is now one of those races that means a little more to me personally, because my daughter was born during that weekend. Now, it obviously doesn't fall the same weekend every year, but the Australian GP will always give me that special moment. I'm definitely excited for that and back to like a, it's not even, I want to say a normal racing schedule, but it's really not, because we're still going to be watching at like an ungodly hour here in the States. But somewhat of a normal, the whole Saturday thing, just, man, even like when the Las Vegas Grand Prix, the only reason that I think the Las Vegas Grand Prix made sense for being on, because it was like a 1 o'clock in the morning thing, just like the Australian Grand Prix will be anyway, which is the only reason why I was kind of okay with it. But this whole like Saturday morning thing, it just throws off my entire weekend. So
it doesn't feel like a proper F1 weekend if it's on a Saturday. But yeah, we're excited for Australia. We're excited to kind of get back on the regular schedule of things, but let's just hope for better racing this season, you guys. As always.
Yeah. I love the comments. I love the comments and that it's always interesting to hear what you guys think.
I was literally about to say that.
Yeah.
As always, we love the comments. Keep them coming. We're going to ask them every single week. Make them good. We will read them.
I'd love to keep that, conversation going more so with our fans. You know, and the more we can engage with you guys, the more we want to. So, open line of communication here.
Yep. All right. Well, you guys have a wonderful week. We will be back next weekend. And yeah, have a lot more to talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah, you guys all have a great weekend, and then we'll enjoy Australia. But hopefully we'll have some answers to some of the biggest questions mm-hmm. happening right now. And if not, we'll have definitely other topics to cover for our future episode.
Yeah. As always, you can find Vincenzo on Twitter at the Vincenzo or Vincenzo?
Just Vincenzo Landino.
Just Vincenzo Landino. I am the VF Castro, and we will talk to y'all next week. Bye.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF One Show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.